You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5.
And we're going to be chatting about the Zoso rejection and implication, the pros and the cons. Good morning to you, Mr. Hamill-Smith. Good morning.
Good morning. Very great to be here on Freedom.
Oh, thank you so much for getting up and chatting with us this morning. But before we go forward, somebody asked me, can you identify or at least give us the scope of work put upon or expected of a Senate president? What does the Senate president do?
All right, so the Senate president there is, first of all, he has to ensure that the senators abide by their standing orders, which require a certain methodology, certain positions to be adopted in relation to the carried on conduct of the proceedings in the Senate. Yeah. And he's there to act as the referee, if you like, if people go beyond the boundaries of what is permissible.
But is that different to the Speaker of the House?
No, they're very much, they have the same sort of routine. The Senate can be a somewhat more placid, if you want, place than the House, because it's more partisan there. But no, it's by and large, they do have different standing orders. So there are some differences, yes, but not in real substance.
All right. I hope that cleared it up for you, Dexter. Thank you so much for sharing the thought this morning. When I made mention that you were coming on, they asked me to find out and see if we can verify that. Now, with that being said, Zosos, let's talk a little bit about why that bill did not see the light of day.
Well, I mean, the long and short of it is you required a 3/5 majority, and therefore, you know, given what had happened in the House, you couldn't have expected that the opposition would be supporting it. So therefore, you know, everybody coming to the Senate to debate that bill would have known you needed to get at least 4 independent senators supporting the bill if it was going to be approved. That particular day, well, it didn't happen all in one day. The debate took place over a few days. And senators, as I understand it, wanted certain amendments to the bill. And the Attorney General made known that the time didn't permit. If you make amendments, by the way, you should realize that if you make amendments in the Senate, that means that you have to go back down to the House to get approval. So it short circuits the time somewhat. Not that it shouldn't happen. I'm just pointing out that's what would have flowed one could have asked whether or not they should have started in the Senate perhaps to begin with, but
government was saying at the point in time, let's just get this bill passed and we would revisit and sit down and go through it again. I guess the independents didn't trust that process, because once we pass the bill and we sign off on it, to get you back to the table to pull back and repeal certain things or even put a sunset clause in there, you know, could be a bit tricky. They did not, and they didn't support it. Now, as we go forward, let's look at some of the pros and cons of Zosos. In your learned and respected opinion, would this have benefited Trinidad and Tobago?
Yeah. So that is where, you know, I think the really beginning of conversation has to be. Is there something that we have to do to change the dynamics so far as crime is concerned? If you believe that crime is out of control, then what should we do? So, you know, there was a state of emergency, and Zoso was presented as something that didn't constitute a state of emergency. And you'll see that they're more balancing powers. The rights to judicial review, the rights to have been brought before the magistrate or the high court were in place with Zoso, as opposed to what would happen in a state of emergency. I think there's a consensus that something needs to be done. What that should be is what people ask. So if I had to read into what the independent senators were saying, is we needed some more checks and balances in the system than we were seeing. What would I say if I perhaps were involved? I would like to see, perhaps rather than whole communities be targeted, my understanding, it's sometimes two or three streets within a community where the gangs are, you know, as somebody put it, you know, 6th Street and 7th Street or whatever, wherever that might be. And therefore, argue whether perhaps we should be micro-targeting wherever that real gang activity was taking place. So that you don't besmirch the entire community, but you focus narrowly. Now, that's not to say that you could only pick out the houses where gangs are. You know, it could be 2-3 streets a block or whatever it is, as opposed to the entire community. But we don't know, in fact, how this community was going to be determined, how the boundaries of a zone. So I would have liked to have seen it, you know, more finely defined as a specific area. So if you ask what I do think that I would have preferred to see a recommendation, the Prime Minister acting on a recommendation from the Chief of Defence Staff, the Commissioner of Police, determining where those zones were, as opposed to the, I think what was put down is that it was based on consultation with them. And that, one may argue, gave the Prime Minister too much latitude. Because in Trinidad and Tobago, we know what consultation means. Mm-hmm. You know, the people being consulted don't necessarily have to be taken on board. I would have liked to see more defined terms there. And the leader of that ought to be those who are being asked to introduce this.
Yeah, a lot of prisons.
Security areas being the recommenders, and the Prime Minister acting on it. So that would have been my approach to how that should be.
But given the fact that the Prime Minister would have reserved the right solely with the powers to declare the state, the community Zoso, will we treading on dangerous waters, having put all that power in the hands of one politician?
Yeah, so that's what I would have preferred, a balance there. I don't think we were, you know, I do think, I would imagine that the Prime Minister would have acted reasonably. That's what you would expect. But from a legal perspective, I would have liked to have seen more power given to the Commissioner of Police and the Chief of Defence Staff in making that determination. I think the bill on the whole had a good intent. You know, as I say, they retained judicial review. You had the right to go to, you know, before the magistrates and the High Court, which is vastly different from a state of emergency, where, as you see, they would have kept people locked up for 6 months. Yes, there's a tribunal, but we never heard of any sitting of a tribunal. So it's different, you know, in a significant way, I would say, from a state of emergency. And in that regard, I think it was important that we safeguard the protection. So there were some safeguards there. In terms of community development, it would have been better, I think, if there were more specifics there. I think that if there should be posted, people live up to something, not when they have to wait 6 months later to find out if things are going right. On a monthly basis, we should have been, I think the bill should have provided for reports being made. Is crime coming under control, or is it getting worse? Are our students attending school or more staying away from school? Are the streets cleaner? Are people taking on that sort of responsibility? I would like to, you know, those reports being there so we could, you have a check and balance as to whether, and people have a sense that we are emerging, we are improving, coming out of this, as opposed to just being waiting 6 months later. All right. Do think I would prefer to see rather than a sunset clause, because I could, my own
yes, Davey, you have
sense.
All right, so we have a caller on the line, want to speak with you. Sure. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning once more, Davey, and to Mr. Hamel Smith, Senior Counsel.
Good morning.
A pleasant good morning and Happy New Year. Mr.
Thanks,
Hamel Smith, you and No Mama Guy are one of the most respected lawyers stroke politicians in this country. If you were the Prime Minister, bearing the political system and who support who and who don't support who and who oppose who and so on, if you were the Prime Minister of this country, what would be the measures that you would try to put in place in the fight against crime, bearing in mind the population as we see it today? I thank you. Enjoy.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think this also was a good measure. I think I would have liked to see more checks and balances. There was always this sense that certainly I had years ago when a state of emergency had been called, I was recommending that we should be able to have this state of emergency in areas which were more troublesome, shall we call it that, as opposed to being blanketed around the entire country. And I had made those recommendations back then. I think the PNM were in power at the time. So, you know, it's not a political, you know, taking sides type of issue.
All right. Hello, good morning.
Hey, morning. Morning, David. Morning to the guests there. There's a comrade of mine who keeps on insisting, and I do agree with him, that before you implement something like these doses, first the security services and their blunders must be kept in check by certain laws. And how important do you think it is? As we see, we have the issue here with the open your hands and the stuff that took place with the gentleman and the lady here.
Mm.
So what would you recommend in terms of to clean up the police service and the security forces so that the legislator would have been better, you know, than just giving those that kind of power? Thank you.
Yeah, so the caller is right. The debate on this bill happened at a crucial time when things were happening on the outside, which made the public more concerned about how police would act. But there is in the bill, and perhaps we needed to formalize it more, that there would be training of both the army and those who were allocated to carry on this job under ZOSU, that there would be training in terms of community development and having a different approach to interfacing with the community. So there was that sort of training that was supposed to take place. I don't have particulars of it, but that was the intention.
So in hindsight, ZOSOs would have been something beneficial to this country. One, if done properly and done in the correct manner, citizens could have benefited from this. What people were worried about is they being affected by their constitutional rights being suspended from them as the ZOSOs takes flight. That was the concern.
All right. So yes, you know, if you have crime, one got the sense that people were saying that gangs, you were getting that idea that gangs were, there were areas in which not even the police could go, not even business could operate, as it were. And therefore, what was happening is the gang leader was saying, this is my community, I am the government. And therefore it came a point in Trinidad and Tobago where we had to make a change in how we dealt with crime. And I think this also, by and large, could have been improved, but by and large was a good intervention with the potential not just to suppress crime, but the really potential to have communities improve. And perhaps there was less focus on that, and we should be more focused in that. And there should be reports coming to Parliament, coming to the public, as to how, what improvements are being made to the life of citizens within that community. But I started off by saying I would have preferred a micro-targeting. Now, I'm not in the police service or security business, so I'm not, you know, saying I'm an expert in that area.
All right.
Good morning, baby.
Good morning.
I know the voice, but I can't make out who is the individual you have as a guest this morning.
Mr. Hamill Smith, senior counsel.
Oh, Mr. Hamill Smith. It's so good to hear you on the program, man.
Yes, he's on with us this morning.
Right, okay.
Good morning, brother.
Mr. Hamill Smith. You know, although I changed my name to Bill, I want to say something to you, and I want to let you know this, okay? The government of this country is neglecting the country by, number one, not ensuring that everyone paid their proper taxes. If the taxes were paid properly, we can take that money and we can use it into social development, human resource development, community development, ensuring that we build better communities, access to education for all these kind of things we could do. But that money that we are losing every year, the last estimate was $26 billion. We're only collecting 60% of all collectible revenue. How could we run a country like that? And why is the government husbanding this position that they don't want a TPRA?
Hold on, will you get this figure that we lose in $26 billion a year?
Mr. Rowley said, figures made available to him in 2019, he said that we are only collecting 60% of all collectible revenue. And because
we're talking Zosos this morning, the pros and cons.
We're talking social intervention. How could you do social intervention without money? Mr. Hammersmith knows that also too. So I'm saying to you, Mr. Hammersmith, the state needs to fix tax collection. They need to fix the broken police service, which has been broken since Pastor Dutton did a commission of inquiry way back in 1991. They need to fix the custom services where guns are coming in. We are paying public servants and they're allowing guns to come through our port. We need to fix these things before we could move to Zozo. And I'm saying to you that Zozo was poorly planned and it would have meant a destruction of these communities rather than an upliftment. So I'll listen to your comments.
Okay, Mr. Hammersmith.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is tax leakage. It hasn't started today. Over, you know, really, the fact is that over 50 years, over our independence period, we have not been as good as we ought to be in terms of tax collection. And yes, the callers pointing to the fact that guns are coming in, customs or border patrol, border control must be involved in it, and that is a target. That doesn't mean, on the other hand, that if you have crime at your doorstep, you're going to turn a blind eye to it. And I think that was something you needed to get under control. But there are things that certainly I've recommended, our Firearms Act. I mean, I'm sure you see from time to time the police come out and they display huge amounts of ammunition and guns that really belong to our warfare and not in Trinidad and Tobago.
All right, take a listen to this.
Nobody attaches. There's nobody, you know, in possession of these items, and that's a crazy notion.
All right, take a listen to this.
Morning, Davey. Morning, Mr. Hanel Smith. Torbasa Trace here. The major problem with solving crime in Trinidad and Tobago is anytime you hold any of these young black men, and these are the men turning up in videos in court and in prison and in remand yard, anytime you hold one of them, somebody says white collar crime. These fellas are not the generators of what we are seeing. They are just the executors. And it's other races doing other things and other communities. And if you read Lavantil, you should read West Moorings. And if you read one part of Pinal where the Africans live, you need to read Durbasa Trace, where Mr. Durbasa lives. And they always
you see, Mr. Hammersmith, what I don't like, and I can't seem to shake it, is why are we playing the race card with Zosos? Why do people believe that it would have been a racially motivated distribution, or for want of a better term, in terms of where these Zosos are called, are claimed, the parameters, the communities? Why do we play the race card? Why is the country feeling that way?
Yeah, I agree with you that there are multidimensional problems that Trinidad and Tobago has. But one of those that impact on the security of people, and one of the prime requirements of any government is to allow people to feel safe and secure. And if you don't do that, then you miss the boat. I mean, we had that, you know, conversation over the last 10 years, where you know, the Minister of National Security says, that's not my job. But it is the most key, because nothing else happens unless safety and security is in place.
Should we weed out the corrupt elements within the police service before we roll out something like Zosos? Should we should attempts be made to constitutionally reform the TTPS in terms of getting...
That's a long-term exercise, but yes, you need to do that. Certainly, in terms of who you have, who are you going to use to target under Zosu? What policemen and officers are going to be involved? I mentioned that there is a provision for training, but you need to handpick those people, and you have to ensure that you don't have the criminal element seeking to supervise criminals. So you are right about that. But we can't wait until we get the whole police service right. There are good components, I'm sure, within the police force, and the commissioner of police would have a good idea as to how to handpick his people in order to have the best
when we look at the model
particular regions also.
When we look at the, now we talk about the pros, what are some of the cons, if you can re-highlight them, if we did and we missed it, if this Zozo bill had passed and was allowed to roll out, what are some of the, we spoke about the pros, but let's talk a little bit about the cons.
All right, so I would have liked to have seen, rather than a sunset, a sunlight clause. In other words, what you want to do is to throw sunlight on the operations, let's say after 6 months, to see where we could improve the legislation. Where is it ranking? I would have also liked to have seen monthly bulletins being put out as to how communities are improving. Because that, at the end of the day, this isn't just attacking the criminals. This is trying to improve your society as a whole. And you would want to uplift these communities. And those are reports that I would have liked to have seen come out in a monthly basis. I think perhaps there was too much discretion given to the Prime Minister in terms of determining these spots. And that may be where you start to get the spillover in terms of race. And, you know, perhaps if you had thought it out, if the government had thought it out, they would have recognized that perhaps people would have easily sort of moved in that direction of race, whereas if she had put the Commissioner of Police and the Chief of Defence Staff being the ones who make the recommendation, which then the government, the Prime Minister, takes up, I think we would have dampened, if you like, the concern about race. Well, and that's something you have to take into account in a society like ours.
And I mean, going forward now, the AG was stressing on the urgency to get this bill done so we'd have something in place. Not that we don't. Before I go to that question, let's take this call quickly. Good morning. Good morning. All right, 625-2257 and 627-3223. Give me that call back. They mentioned that there was nothing in place. Now that the SOE is gone, we didn't get the Zoso bill passed. What is happening now? What next?
Yeah.
Where should the Prime Minister turn?
Yeah, so you do have talk about, the potential having another state of emergency.
She warned them.
And that has to be on the basis, as per the Constitution, if something has arisen which gives you, leads to the conclusion, and the president is satisfied that there is need for the introduction of a state of emergency. Frankly, if that's the way we have to go down the road, I think we were far better off with Zosu. But
interesting.
Yeah, I would like to see the government come back again with a bill. Now they have time to introduce perhaps some checks and balances in the Zosu bill that would recognize an uplifting of communities whilst targeting the criminal elements. So
hello.
You get the balance correct.
All right. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Hammersman. Morning.
Good morning.
I don't think Zozo would make any sense, you know, Mr. Hammersmith. Let me just upgrade the communities. Let me make this point here. As you outline, I think I heard you because I was doing something else while trying to listen to you, that there is it's a small section of the population, of the community, of each community, and I would like to know which community are we referring to. Because, let me draw an example for you. A man leave, let's call one of these communities, Lavantil, and go to Gornas and put on a robbery. That doesn't make Lavantil the hotspot. That makes Shaguanas the hotspot because the crime is committed in Shaguanas. So where are you going to lock down? So if you lock down Lavantil, looking for Daman, that means you have the information. And if you have the information, you don't have to lock down my entire community, as we just outlined, to hold 1% of the population. Because if it's the same mini SOE, as some people trying to justify it as, well, we just came out of an SOE a few days ago, and how many people were locked up? And how many were charged? Actually brought before the court? Not much, really. They tell me they're home. I can't remember how much they said charge, but I wait to see when they reach before the court, what is the outcome?
All
right. I wait to see the repercussions of these people, especially the lady
that
was released. I wait to see what lawyers picking up that matter. Because we've been through this already. The state paid awesome sums under your administration when you was in office after, via the same attorney general that is now, or the state attorney general, take the same state after locking up the same people to court. And when this matter, we are playing with the citizens, Mr. Hammersmith. Enjoy your morning.
Thank you so much. Hello, good morning. All right, 625.
I was saying, one of my key points is that we need micro-targeting as opposed to entire communities. And perhaps that might address what the caller's concern is so far.
Were you all aware as to whether or not there would have been a committee for the Prime Minister to liaise with in order before she can declare us a zone of special operation in any one community?
What it talks about is a recommend that it would be in consultation with the commissioner and the chief of defense. That's what the bill says. I'm just saying, and of course we have seen this turn out in reality.
Mm.
I would like to see a micro-targeting. The police have to have the air to the grounds. That's what, policing really entails.
All right, let's take another call quickly. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Murray, and good morning to Mr. Hammer.
Good morning to you, sir.
I want to ask the attorney, who would have been a past lawmaker, what is preventing the TTPS from using the current legislation that we have? We have a number of legislations, so you were part of the legislative process in passing laws. What is preventing such? And number two, do we need a special committee in Azoto to tell us what the community needs in terms of some of the social ills of fixing them?
Mm.
I don't think so. So the question that we have to ask here is how does the TTPS utilize the legislation that it has? How does it bridge the gap between community policing, meaning that the people in the community in partnership with the TTPS, will be able to apprehend individuals while also using the different agencies that we have to carry out social programs. And I don't know that I have to give up my constitutional rights 4 and 5 to do so. Baby, listen, I would like to hear the attorney, because you see, when we are in office, we have answers, but when we are out, we don't. And I think that's the problem that we have here.
Okay, Mr. Hammersmith.
Yeah, so the caller said, you know, why can't we right now, with current laws, have the police do the job that they're being paid to do? That makes sense from one perspective. But the reality is, since, you know what, 30 years and now has passed and nothing has happened, surely you need a new intervention. And I think this also was the kind of intervention that could have been a game changer. Because you don't want something static remaining forever.
That's right.
You have a game changer. And I don't think, you know, doing the same thing over and over again that we've done for the last 30 years would constitute a game changer.
With that being said, good morning.
Morning again, David.
Mm-hmm.
Due respect to you. That don't make no sense to me, you know, Mr. Hammersmith. I heard a minister, junior minister, Mr. Philip Alexander, argument and argue, so let me, I'm making a point. And this is a fact, eh? I'm not saying what he's saying is true, but it happens in certain communities. So I'm pointing out something to you. And you, as you outlined, 30 years ago, we have the same problem. I'm going to point you where it started and where we are today. He, in the parliament, said to, argument on the Zozo bill, said to us, hey, you know, in certain, he called out the former prime minister in Rowley's constituency, and I had to point out, well, I'm talking to myself, that Rowley is not the prime minister, is not in charge of any constituency anymore. So he called out Diego Martin, all these spots, and say, you know, in the Westmoreland and all these places that the former prime minister used to control. That in those communities at 5:30 on an evening, people have to lock up the house. There's a man saying that in the parliament, trying to justify the Zozo bill. At 5:30 on afternoons, Tanti have to lock up she house, and Granny have to lock up and go inside. And when Tanti call the police, Tanti have a problem, because the bandits get to know that Tanti call. So if a parliamentary man is in parliament trying to argue the bill and telling us that, then our problem, Mr. Hammersmith, is not the bandits. Our problem, Mr. Hammersmith, is the police service, Mr. Because we had several men became large drug dealers in Trinidad and Tobago. And we have a corrupted police service from the head. So from then, if you think from the commissioner of police then to now all these fellas got handed down, you think this police service changed? We had an incident just the other day. We have a present National Security Minister, they gave him a fancy name, telling us to wear body cams. So we can't put the trust in the police for them to wear body cams. If they wear the body cams, they might have a little trust in the police. So we ain't got to say what Philip say in the parliament when you call them Tanti in problem. That is our problem, Mr. Hammersmith. For 30 years, lack trust in the police service, and it has been going down worse and worse just a few days ago. That is why, Davey, you used your program this morning, so the commissioner of police resigned. If the PNM was in office that I've been calling, Hines must go. Hines is a murderer. Same thing they did with the Coast Guard. Coast Guard shoot at the child, and they say Fitzgerald Hines is a murderer. All of a sudden, Alexander is not a murderer. Mr. Hammersmith, the truth is a hard thing to swallow in TNT. Enjoy your morning.
Mr. Hammers.
Well, obviously our police service needs a lot. You know, the detection rate is abysmally poor. I mean, and you know, yes, there's a lot of work to be done, because the police service really reflects our society, yeah?
But
therefore, there are good policemen, and there will be there will be those who perhaps are involved in crime. What the callers alluded to is that police, people within the police force are leaking information to criminals. And very disheartening. I have no doubt it's true in some respects. But that doesn't change the issue about, you know, getting crime under control. One has to admit, for instance, during the last 6 months of the state emergency, murders went down significantly by 40% or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge gap. If we could have that happening
overall,
not only, yes, you know, throughout, as a matter of course, and presumably that will get better the more you actually target the criminals, the gangs, keep the murder under control, the better and better it will get. That was Jamaica's experience, where today Jamaica is flourishing. Unfortunately, we had a setback in terms of the recent hurricane, but they've been flourishing because they've become disciplined. And sometimes you have to reach rock bottom before you can start to climb up, because people don't see the light of day until their backs are against the wall. And we need, frankly, not to wait for that moment, but to have the interventions that we need right now. It's not just in crime. Yes, you know, I think some of the callers are alluding to the fact that you have corruption throughout the country. And I have recommended we have a serious fraud office where you get an independent prosecutor, special prosecutor, and forensic investigators. Yes, you know, there are those arms that we need to pursue in addition to getting crime, murders under control.
I want to thank you very much. We're out of time. I want to thank you for coming on this morning and sharing some insight with these osos and what it means in terms of the pros and cons. And thank the callers for being respectful in calling and sharing their thoughts as well. I had a final thought this morning, but it has eluded me in terms of what with the. Oh, right. Here is a quick question. Can we look, or could it be said now that these persons were released without any charges being brought to them? Can we see an upsurge in lawsuits being levied against the police or the government?
Right. I don't know the answer to the question. I think we'll have to wait and see what transpires. I really wouldn't be in a position to predict. I think one caller says, in past states of emergency, that happened, and maybe it will happen again. More reason why I prefer the ZOSO approach.
Mm-hmm.
You had a right of judicial review. You had a right to go. The courts were still, you know, both the magistrates and the high court were accessible during this process.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, in that regard, the ZOSO was far better than a state of emergency. We shouldn't have that happening. You know, once you brought in ZOSO, I'm not saying it didn't need modification. I'm not saying it couldn't be improved. You don't get it right the first time around sometimes. And one hopes that the government take a step back, rethink the issue, and come back with another ZOSO bill. I would like to see micro-targeting. I would like to see, you know, provisions showing the improvement in the society, in the communities that are involved. I would like to see the bulletins, the publications being made so people get a sense of confidence. That's what we're lacking. Huh? Today we're just feeling dismal and down because we feel that we're on a treadmill into hell.
Hmm.
And we have to change the trajectory. And ZOSO was an opportunity, if properly done, could raise, if you like, the confidence of, and there are many other things that we have to do. But at that level, where crime is a suppressant, if you like, of development, and you need to get that under control.
Mr. Hammersmith, Senior Counsel, thank you so much for chatting with us. Let us do this again in the not-too-distant future as we see what government plans, as their plan unveils in coming weeks and months to follow through on promises made in terms of protecting citizens and perhaps another state of emergency. Hopefully, as you rightfully say, maybe revisit ZOSO now. You said you had 72 hours and it wasn't enough time. Now that the bill has been defeated, you have all the time in the world to sit with the stakeholders, the independents, the opposition, see what is 106 amendments. Look at them and see if it is making any sense, what common ground you can come to, and revisit it. Thank you again, Minister.
Thank you for having me, Davey, and glad to be on Freedom.
Thank you so much. It was nice. Again. Yes, indeed so.
You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.